congregations to say, come forward, and if there's a bit of news about what's going on at a particular church, it's a way for us to hear what other folks are doing and to share if we've got something going on. So at the most recent, with the next weekend coming up, I thought this is a great time to invite them in addition to the other ways we've communicated. So I went to the microphone, and you want to say something that isn't just the normal thing, because there's so many things you want them to remember. So I said to them that in March of 1858, there were a group of people who met and formed Hebron Presbyterian Church. And those folks were guided on that day in March of 1858 with three basic visions that they hoped to accomplish. The first thing they wanted to accomplish was they wanted to create a community of faith where the Presbyterian women would become such a juggernaut that one day they would dominate attendance banners at the Presbyterian women's gatherings. Check. You've done that. The second thing that those visionaries had before them that they wanted to do was, in 160 years, they wanted to have a two-day party. And we're going to do that next weekend, so we'll be checking that one off as well. And so at that point, extended the invitation to them to please, if you're able, come join us on Saturday or on Sunday. We would love to have you. The third thing that day, that fateful day in March, was they said, in that same year, we want this church to host a Presbyterian meeting. So we are going to do that, actually, in September. And as I shared with the folks at the Presbytery, the June gathering, we hope you can make it, but we understand that's optional. But if you don't come in June, we anticipate we will see you in September, because that is an obligation. The point of all that was to have some fun, but also to share the news with folks who may not have seen announcements or the various ways we've communicated. But another way of saying, please come be with us, because to us, next weekend is something we've been anticipating and looking forward to. It's an important thing, and a lot of work and preparation have gone into it, and it's going to be fun. We're going to have guests with us, folks we have maybe haven't seen in a while. That's going to be fun. We're going to have some wonderful soloists, two guest soloists in worship next week. And so we'll have some wonderful music and worship. Food always is a good reason to gather together. But it is going to be a meaningful time next weekend. Before we get to next weekend, though, before we get to the big event coming on June 9 and 10, I want to quickly go over the previous 158 years and ask the question, how did we get to this point? How did we arrive at this moment of celebration? And part of the way I came to this was, I've made clear over the course of time that I'm not a math major. And so my figures are rounded off. But from March of 1858 till this very day, there have been at least 8,000 Sundays. Probably just past 8,000 Sundays by a couple hundred, perhaps. But ballparking 8,000 Sundays. On most of those Sundays, there have been people gathered in this space. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Maybe a big crowd, maybe a small crowd. Maybe it's pretty outside, maybe it's not. Maybe it's hot or cold outside. Maybe it's hot or cold in here. But whatever the circumstance, on the vast majority of those 8,000 Sundays, there have been people who have gathered here to observe worship, to participate in a Sabbath gathering. Today's scripture reminds us of what the purpose of worship is. And it reminds us of, in a way, what it's not. That Sabbath isn't about showing up for worship because you're obligated to. It isn't being here because there's this command that you have to worship, and so against your better judgment, against what you would like to do, you trudge off to church because it says you have to. hopefully that is not your experience of Sabbath worship. Sabbath is being reminded of the core importance of this particular moment of the week. And it is a way of being reminded of what is most real in the world. Because sometimes what happens every other day, Monday through Saturday, can feel like that's real life. That's where we get hurt. That's where things are challenging. That's where things are difficult. And sometimes it's great and wonderful and awesome as well, but it can feel like that's where real life happens, and then on Sunday we go to visit God. In reality, the reality is this is as close as we will get to actually experiencing reality, because it's here that we intentionally place ourselves in the presence of God, who made all this, who put us here and put all this together. And if any of the rest of it is going to make sense, it's going to come through the lens of our experience of God that really gets worked on in its most intentional way in this Sabbath space. These two scriptures this morning both deal with Sabbath. In the Deuteronomy passage, it's talking to the Hebrew people, and there's a couple of short, really kind of easy to remember instructions. One is to keep the Sabbath day and to treat it as holy. So keep the Sabbath day, treat it as holy. The second piece of that is then 6 days you may work. The seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord. So 6 days are set aside for the working, but the seventh day is for the Lord. Now that passage, that brief passage from Deuteronomy, wrapped up with a bit that reminded the people that they had been slaves in Egypt, and that they had not released themselves from Egypt, but that it had been God who had done that. Now, I want you to consider why Sabbath would be put together with the reminder of it's God who got you out of Egypt. And I believe that those two things get joined together, get married up, because there is a reminder there for them, and there is a reminder there for us, that while our work is important and valuable, ultimately, our work is about funneling itself through our relationship with God so that we can understand what it is our work is about, what it really means, and what it is we're working towards. And also that, eventually, ultimately, it does not find meaning independent of God. It doesn't say that on the seventh day, you're supposed to rest and congratulate yourselves for releasing yourselves from Egypt. It says on the seventh day you stop and you give thanks to God, who was the one who freed you from slavery in Egypt. We don't free ourselves from bondage. We can't do that. But we can put our energy and our effort every day into the things that we do in such a way that brought through that prism, that relationship with God, that we visit and we pay particular attention to in this time together of worship. And in that way, Sabbath becomes the way that we understand all that we do. So then we have Jesus moving forward about 1,000 years. We have Jesus talking with the Pharisees, and there's always this tension, it seems like, between Jesus and the Pharisees. And in this one, the Pharisees are trying to catch Jesus doing something he's not supposed to do on the Sabbath, which would be a lot like having a book like that, the rule book, and walking around with the rule book to see, are you doing anything you're not supposed to be doing? Can we catch you with something in the wrong place? So this is what's happening in this particular moment, in this passage, in this relationship between Jesus and the Pharisees. And in the midst of it, where Jesus' disciples are eating, and maybe they shouldn't be eating this because it's the Sabbath and they can't do the work of picking the corn, or Jesus brings a man forward with a withered hand and in defiance of the Pharisees says, I'm going to heal the hand. I'm going to have him stretch out his hand and his hand will be well. And asks him, is there anyone here who wants to say, maybe we shouldn't be healing anybody on the Sabbath day? Because would anybody like to put that into words? And clearly nobody wants to speak into that silence, but they're quick afterwards to go out and have a meeting about what he's just done and say, we really have to get him for this. But this is what Jesus is doing in this passage, is lifting up for us what Sabbath is and what it is not. And he says something which is really important to think about. The Sabbath was created for humans. Humans were not created for the Sabbath, which is to say that Sabbath is a gift to us. We are not God's gift to the Sabbath, and our point is not simply to be about keeping rules, but rather that Sabbath is a gift to us, which if we step into it with our hearts open and our spirits prepared to do what God asks of us and to really make ourselves available and present and set aside all those other things, that life will be better. Life will be more meaningful. Life will be more what God intends. Sabbath is a tool for drawing us closer to God. It is not a tool for drawing us closer to a rule book. Those are two very different things. And while I always want to make the point that the Pharisees, I think in their hearts, wanted to do the right thing and really felt like they were on the right path, somewhere along the way, it had become the idea to them that what we really need to do is make the rule book happy rather than live in such a way that we show compassion and love in our lives every day in such a way that rather than keeping the rule book happy, we keep God happy. There's a Presbyterian pastor whose name is Gibson Stroop, and he wrote this about this passage. He says, Jesus tries to change the idea of the Sabbath from being an oppressive ogre which denies food to the hungry and healing to the sick to what it was originally, a reminder that we belong to God. Sabbath keeping. Sabbath keeping is what we do today. Sabbath keeping is what we will do again next week. Sabbath keeping is what churches all around us are aiming to do Sunday mornings when we gather. Sabbath keeping is what has been done here more than 8,000 times over the course of 160 years. That's our story to this point. That's who we are. That's what we're about. That's what those folks who gathered on that first gathering, that's what they really were about, was establishing a place where people could come into God's presence and worship and enjoy Sabbath. It really is the story of every church, the story of congregations, large and small, country, city, wherever you will find us. I am fascinated by pictures of this church. I love to take pictures of this church, but I also love to see old pictures of the church. And I love the way that when people look at them, they will, usually they're taken from out there, but what they will use as a way to identify what era the picture might be, by which trees happen to be present in the picture, where's the tree that belongs here, or which tree is absent, which bushes are there, or which bushes are absent, or is it a picture from prior to when the ramp was there, or a picture after the ramp was there. All those things, for those who have a history, or for those who have a history and can interpret to others of us who weren't there at those points, are ways of telling the story of this place, and a part of what I look forward to next weekend. The core of the place, though, remains the same. Whatever it looked like, wherever the trees were, wherever the bushes were, whether there were ramps or not, the core of this place, if you spend a moment just letting it settle on you, you can feel the presence of those folks who, over the course of all that time, have gathered on all those Sabbaths for the purpose of worship. For the purpose of leaving all that stuff that's weighing on them and coming and placing themselves in God's presence. I have loved showing up the last couple of weeks and watching the church change its appearance as the paint has gone on and as the landscaping has taken shape outside, and just watch it because, again, I've always been, it's a beautiful place. But to see it sort of step out and have these things and to see it gleam and to see it shine and to be clean, I feel like there it has the building in a way has been renewed, and that care that you feel for a place, not that idolization, but that care that you take of the house of God. I love the way that shows how much so many people care about this place, and that you represent so many people over the course of time who also have cared about this place. The story to this point is that for 160 years this place has stood here and reminded people of a way that is different. Whatever else is going on in the community around us, whatever has been there, this has been a place where the people of God gather and remind the world around it that there is a way that is different. This particular Sunday morning, before our big celebration, we have our monthly remembrance of God's big celebration, which will be God's great banquet, God's feeding us at God's table. It is a reminder that we arrived at this point not by legalistically showing up because we have to, not because my dad made us get out of bed and didn't give us a choice but told us we were going to church. We come because God calls us to this place. The Sabbath was given to us. We were not created for the Sabbath. We were not created to serve the Sabbath. We are created to serve God. And God has given us this wonderful gift, this wonderful tool of the Sabbath, so that we can understand each one just a little more fully, a little more clearly, what it is God is calling us to do, who it is God is calling us to be, whether it is next Sunday on a huge day of great anticipation and celebration, or whether it is this Sunday, another Sunday among those 8,000 in which we gather, we worship, and on this particular day come to the Lord's table. Thanks be to God.